Thank you very much, Sharon.
It's the Ray Dasha Show on RTE Radio 1. Have a great summer.
And a very good afternoon to you. Brenda here, in for Ray, just for the day. How we all, there is so much going on. There is so much to talk about. And you can do that just by texting me, 51551, or email ray@rte.ie. Tell me all. And as we heard Sharon say there, it looks like the weather is picking up, which is great. And there's a tweet in just from Met Éireann, which says, weather for the week ahead. High pressure is bringing a spell of overall dry weather. This lasting into the weekend with good sunny spells for most days. Feeling warmer too, with temperatures generally around 20 and 23 degrees. How lovely is that? And I was just thinking, it's probably the last full week of summer holidays for many children. Wow, it flew by so quickly. The blink of an eye and all that. So what are you doing to enjoy it? What are you up to around the country? 51551. I'd love to know what you're doing. Cheer me up. Bring a smile to my face on this beautiful day. 51551 to let me know all your antics. And of course, there's the after effects of the All-Ireland Hurling Final. Congrats to Limerick. Just stunning. Stunning. And I don't know about you, but after the game, the shots of the players with their really young babies, oh my God, how cute was that? They completely stole the show. And I think my ovaries were doing somersaults. And tonight, there's even more to talk about because it is the Love Island final. If you haven't watched it or you couldn't be bothered, that is totally great. You're probably better off, 100% better off. But I was thinking about it and I have spent nearly 50 hours of my summer, of my life, watching this season's programme, which I'll never get back again. I could have been much more productive with my time. I could have batch cooked dinners. Actually, that's unlikely. But anyway, walked from Dublin to Cork and back, brushed up on my tap dancing. Remember, I was a former Billy Barry kid, read a few books, decluttered the hot press, which I've put off for a very, very long time. But I have enjoyed most of it. So what would you do if somebody gifted you 50 hours of time? How would you spend it? What would you actually do? 51551. And if you're going to watch it tonight, like many, how are you going to do that? Are you going to have a small cocktail event with friends? Or are you going to attend a screening event? What are your plans within COVID guidelines, of course? I would love to hear them. And I am really sorry about this. I'm apologising. I'm still on Love Island. So sorry about that. But I was looking at last night's episode and it's where the parents met the family members. And I have to say, what a brave thing to do, wearing a pair of swimming togs, or actually less than a pair of swimming togs in a lot of cases, than to meet your possible future in-laws. But what I am looking for today are your stories of meeting your partner's parents, especially if they've gone wrong. You know what I mean? You know the type where you end up and you go sleepwalking around the house and you get into bed with your future mother-in-law. Those kind of stories. I would love to hear them. And I was remembering back to the first time I met my husband's parents. All very nerve-wracking, of course. And wanted to have the right outfit on and all the rest. But every time, they live in Kilkenny, and every time my husband went home, do not judge him, and he has changed, he would bring a bag of dirty washing with him for his mother to do. So we walk in, he walks in ahead of me, and his poor dad came out and said, it wouldn't be you if you didn't come home with a bag with you. And in I came. Now, obviously, he didn't mean me. Of course he didn't mean me, but he was very embarrassed and everyone laughed and it was all about, but in a way it diffused the tension. So it was all right. I want to know, what are your horror story encounters meeting your partner's parents? 51, did I say partner's parents? Yeah, future in-laws, you know what I'm saying. 51551. We have lots on the show today. Connor Price will answer your consumer queries, so get them into us on pricewatch@rte.ie. Gerry O'Keefe from Strong Gens is going to be talking to me very shortly about volunteering and teaching English to children who are caught up in conflicts. And obviously there's a lot of that in the news with Afghanistan at the moment. Tom Doyle is going to tell us about the first ever GAA graphic novel. So there is an awful lot on the show today. Let me see, Aideen's been on straight away and said, hi Aideen here, last week of summer holidays, we're in County Sligo enjoying Mullaghmore and the beautiful sunshine. I'm jealous. And my husband John and I are off to lovely Donegal with our dog, Dude. Hey, Dude. And we're so delighted that only sunshine is forecast. Yay, we'll enjoy it. I have a question for you, and maybe you can enlighten me on this one. Can anyone explain how voice notes on WhatsApp have become a thing? Instead of having a chat with somebody, you record a message, and they can be quite long. And then the other person records their response and sends it, not hours later, but actually immediately. So why don't you just talk to each other directly? I first noticed it with the teenagers in my life, in the car, etc. But now all the adults are doing it. What is the advantage? Can someone tell me of recording a voice note? Are there ethics involved? Am I missing something? And maybe I'm just not with it, because like what you get is you hear this kind of walk around. Yeah, they're holding their phone up and they're going, yeah, I don't know if I'll go there tonight. I don't know what to wear. Yeah, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? Bye. And you're going, what was that about? She's just responded then a second later. Anyway, enlighten me, please. Voice notes 51551. I want to say a quick hello to somebody because I promised a very young man, Kevin O'Donnell, he's 11, that and a huge big Limerick hurling fan, that I would say hello to his granny and granddad, John and Elsa O'Donnell, who are celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary today. Happy anniversary, Elsa and John. What's a 60th wedding anniversary called? Does anyone know? Silver is 25, 50 is golden. What's 60? I'm sure you're going to be able to tell me. Anyway, congratulations, Elsa and John, 60 years. That's really good going. Have you been out in a restaurant lately, either dining inside or outside or getting a coffee or anywhere at a counter and you want to leave a tip, but most people aren't carrying cash anymore? And you're going, how do we tip people? And you want to tip those who are serving you because, like with COVID, the hospitality sector, they're only back at work. They've had such a rotten time. You want to give them a nice tip. Or you're walking along and somebody's busking and you don't have any change and you want to get there and they're kind of doing Irish dancing on a log or something to the Bee Gees in the background and you want to actually give them money, but you don't have the cash. Well, anyway, I have to say, great news, a Dublin-based startup company called Just Tip have come up with new technology to allow people to tip more easily when paying with plastic or other cashless technologies. The company's tap-to-tip machines allow customers to tip with their phone or a bank card without going through the cumbersome process of scanning codes or entering card details. The machines also ensure that the tips, very important, go directly to the servers in the restaurant and grab and go settings like coffee shops rather than in cash flow. Rather than into the cash flow of the business. And the machines are situated just beside the till. So instead of the tip jar, they'll replace that in coffee shops and other settings. It's a very good idea, isn't it? Really is. Good luck to them. Just Tip. And they're in 15 outlets at the moment, with a further 25 locations signed up. It's a sign of how things are changing and the times, but it is a great idea. Well done. Just Tip. And hopefully they'll be all over the country. And our servers, our waiters, our waitresses, our buskers will be able to get the cash and the money that they need. And that is that little bit of cushion that allows them, I suppose, buy other things with the money that they want in their lives. And, 60th anniversary is a diamond anniversary. Thank you very much. Can you say a big happy birthday to Evie Mullen, aged 11, heading to the sunny southeast? Big love from her mum and dad and sister, Roisin. Just done it. Happy birthday, Evie. Now, I hope you're going to get a good night's sleep as well, because very interesting piece on her.ie about falling asleep and trying to get into a sleep. And a kind of interesting timing too, because a lot of children are out of the routine because they're staying up much later, but they'll all be getting ready to go back into school, and it's very hard to switch them back into that routine and get them to go to bed that bit earlier, especially when it's a bit brighter. But anyway, here's an article that I thought was quite interesting about trying to get yourself asleep at night. If you're tired of feeling wired when you're meant to be feeling tired and ready for bed, here's a trick that we should all be doing that's going to help us fall asleep faster. Take a bath. Yes, we all know baths are very relaxing and a very lovely way to indulge in some much needed self-care. But did you also know that baths can literally make you fall asleep faster at bedtime? It's true, because when you step out and you go into a cool bedroom, your body temperature drops and stimulates the production of melatonin. There you go. Why not give it a shot tonight? And if you are going to have a bath, here's three little tips about how you should have a bath to help you fall asleep. You should step into the bath when it's half full. Get rid of the bubbles because they dry out your skin. And don't lie back too much. Keep your chest above the water when you get into the tub. Only submerging your body just below heart level. God, that sounds like hard work. I'd be kind of sitting up. Anyway, if you have any tips on how to get children back into the routine or fall asleep, I've given you one now at the bath, public service remit and all that. But we'd love to hear yours. 51551. And of course, it's now time for our quiz of the day. Yes, it's our quiz of the day. We've rounded up events in history that have happened on this day, the 21st of August, and created questions for two of you to come on air just after four, go head to head for a fantastic prize. And this week, we're giving you the chance to win a two-night breakaway in the Kingsley Hotel in Cork, with breakfast each morning and a dinner one evening in the Springboard restaurant, with beautiful bedrooms, bistro-style restaurant, luxury spa and an extensive health club. The Kingsley has everything you need for the perfect breakaway this summer. Set in the stylish and distinctive riverside location on the banks of the River Lee, a great place to explore Cork City and County. Food lovers can taste the way through the English Market. For art lovers, a visit to see the 4,000 artworks at the Crawford Art Gallery is not to be missed. If you're lucky enough to win on this occasion, if you're not lucky enough to win on this occasion, that is, visit thekingsley.ie for more details on their fantastic summer packages. But to be in with a chance, call us with the answer to this qualifying question. In which Irish county would you find the town of Dungarvan? In which Irish county would you find the town of Dungarvan? Phone 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. And met my future mother-in-law Christmas Eve as I was getting, sick into her ham pot. Too much alcohol. Saw this version in a red dressing gown. Thought it was Santa. Never lived it down. We became great friends. Love it. Keep your horror stories coming in. 51551. Now, an article that caught our eye over the weekend, we were chatting about it up in the office, was a piece in the Sunday Times about Strong Gens. So Strong Gens is a volunteer group that aims to help children caught up in conflicts through education. Gary O'Keefe is a teacher in Carlow Educate Together. He's also head of recruitment with Strong Gens, and he joins me now. Gary, are you there?
I am indeed. How are you?
I'm brilliant, thank you. Carlow, lovely place to be today, I'm sure.
Ah, yeah, the weather's not too bad, so we can't complain.
No. Now, I'm fascinated by Strong Gens because I think people want to help and they're kind of struggling to see, particularly with Afghanistan, what they can do. But can you tell us a little bit about Strong Gens, first of all?
Strong Gens was kind of set up by Sophia, our founder, who basically kind of was over in Greece and saw the kind of conditions of some of the refugee camps there and just felt a real urge to kind of get involved and help. So a lot of the refugee children she met in particular just were kind of crying out for access to education in some form or another because they simply had none, and a lot of them still don't. So she kind of set up a school in the refugee camp. It was more of a kind of a makeshift shed than anything else. And she got kind of other refugees who were there that were teachers themselves to get on board, and anyone that could basically lend a hand, and it kind of grew from there. And we're kind of in a position now where a lot of the children and teenagers who would have started off with us are out of those current refugee camps, but still not in great situations and have no access to education still. So we provide online education for a lot of them, but we also provide some in-person education through volunteers that we've recruited in Athens as well, which is kind of where most of our refugee children are currently based.
And I suppose you're teaching them English, you're trying to give them some kind of a structure, some education. What do you find when you go online and you're trying to teach the children English? What is it like?
It's really, really great, and it's really rewarding regardless of the level of English. So, like, you know, obviously our more advanced students can do other subjects as well. Like, we offer one or two science and maths classes, and we're also looking to start maybe a French and German class for some of them, because that's where some of the students might be relocated to. But even with the younger classes, we usually try and do it where we have a teacher, but we also have a native Farsi speaker who can translate, certain things that might need a little bit of an extra help with. So they would help co-teach the lesson with our Irish teachers or our UK-based teachers or wherever they're coming in from. All the children and all the teenagers that attend these classes are children and teenagers who really, really want to be there, because, like, you know, this is something they really look forward to every week. It gives them a bit something to look forward to during the week, something to kind of really cling on to. And, you know, they've kind of had a lot of kind of uncertainty in their lives to date. So the fact that they know that there's going to be two or three times during the week where they'll show up for an hour, and that same person will be on either in person in Athens as we provide some of our classes, but even at the end of the screen, that it's going to be the same person showing up to check in, to ask them how their week's going, to ask them how they're doing, and then to teach a lesson for an hour is something they all really, really look forward to. And they're always really grateful. And at the end of the hour, they're usually coming off the phone thanking you and saying that they love you and they really appreciate everything you're doing and all that. So it's a really rewarding experience for anybody that's been involved in it.
And the children that you're teaching, are they children in refugee camps in Greece and around that part of the world? What are they like? What are their conditions like?
Well, say, for example, when I was over in Greece back in July, I was talking to a man called Hayat, and he's a refugee himself, and he kind of helps manage our house, the safe house that we have in Athens. It's not really a house. It's more like a three-bed apartment, and we just use the main room as kind of our school, and the other bedrooms that are there to kind of temporarily house some families until they can kind of get up on their feet and they can find their own accommodation. But like Hyatt was telling me that, like, when he was in the camp, he was in a camp designed for 1,000 people, but there was 7,500 of them in there. You know, so like, even if you can imagine anything, whether it's a bus, a building, anything that's designed for a certain amount of people, when you've got over seven times the amount of people that are in a particular space, you can imagine it, obviously, aside from the obvious getting cramped and tight on space, like any of the facilities that would have been provided for 1,000 people aren't exactly going to be much use when you've got that many people there. So yeah, the conditions aren't great. Some of them can end up getting caught in these camps for up to 3 or 4 years. You know, the lucky ones might be out in about a year. But they obviously view this as a better alternative to what might have faced them back at home.
And how did you get involved yourself, Gary?
A former colleague of mine, Megan, who was working in my school, she's since moved to Egypt. She had a post up on her Instagram just looking for teachers to volunteer an hour of their time to teach online. So I messaged her. She sent me on the details. Ended up talking to Sophia and chatting to her over Zoom, and she just asked me a bit about my background, my qualifications, and all that. So I had recently finished studying a master's in management education at the time, so she asked me about that and was inquiring about it, and she said she'd really love if I was interested and had the time to come on board in terms of helping with recruitment, because I had, before I'd even talked to her, I'd put out on Twitter about looking for other teachers to help as well, and I got a massive response. I think about 200 messages or something came in from people online willing to help and spare a bit of time, and this is back in like March time, so lockdown was still fairly intense, so a lot of people probably had time on their hands to do this.
Yeah.
So we got, you know, out of all those responses, you know, we do look for a specific kind of, you know, list of kind of commitments from people to give, so, you know, not in a bad way, but you kind of weed out people then who can really give you the time and can really commit to it. So that's kind of how I got involved since, and I've been kind of doing it ever since then. So like I said, just I recruit the teachers and then also manage the timetables during the week and kind of act as a kind of liaison for the teachers in terms of how the classes are going and stuff like that.
And all voluntary?
Yeah.
All voluntary, yeah.
How
many children would you think you have helped so far, thought so far?
Yeah, but the number kind of fluctuates up and down that we do on a weekly basis, depending on the situations and the access we have to them. But I think last time I checked with Sophia, it was in and around the 300 mark with the mental children that we've kind of provided some level of classes and education to. But like I said, that number can fluctuate up and down depending on the access they might have or their own kind of circumstances and predicaments, you know.
And the way things are developing in Afghanistan, are you expecting to help more children?
Yeah, well, like I said, recently, we even before the news came in from Afghanistan, only the week before that, we had gained access to another refugee camp, and we had, I think, about 5 or 6 classes lined up ready to go. I had just been interviewing about 7 or 8 new teachers who were all really excited about getting on board as well. But then I think the guys running the camp or the authorities in control of it caught wind that we were trying to set up these classes in the camp, and they kind of just shut it down. They said they didn't want it happening in the camp. I'm not sure why. Maybe it was a deterrent to, you know, put people off coming in, or they didn't want it seen as a good thing. I'm not sure really the reasons why. Like I said, I'm not out on the ground there now. I was out there back in July, but not anymore. And it just wasn't nice to hear that. But I'd say, you know, we're always looking to kind of take on board. We're always looking to try and gain access to various camps. We try and work with them when we can. And even if not, we try and still get the children access to it, whether it's just providing with a smart device or something like that. But I'd imagine over the next weeks and couple of months that there will be a much larger influx of students coming in, given the situation. And like, while we are currently based mainly in Greece, you know, we do have contacts in other countries and neighbouring countries of Afghanistan as well, where we're looking to set something up, because it really wouldn't be a runner for us to try and provide some online education to some of the children, particularly girls in Afghanistan, because if they got caught over there, the repercussions mightn't be great for them. So we are expecting a large kind of a large uptake in new students over the next while. So we'll be prepared for that.
So you're looking for volunteers?
Yeah, we're always looking for people to get involved.
I think it's a great way to give something back, because there are so many people now, you know, studying, teaching, teachers who want to do something. And this is a real practical way that they can help. So what can they do?
Yeah, well, they can, I think, say the main area is probably just to send me an email. You can get my email is gary@strong-gens.com, or even if you just follow us on Instagram is probably the main place where we put out our kind of most of our content, just at Strong Gens there. You can send that page a message and it'll be forwarded on to me, or even just check out the website www.stronggens.com. There, and any teachers or even people with a background in teaching English, to teaching English as a foreign language as well, or even just people that are genuinely enthusiastic and want to do it and have done similar work before. Like I said, we're always looking to get people involved. We had just recently recruited a lot of teachers, and their classes fell through, as I was explaining to you. But we'd always prefer to have teachers gone through the process and the interviews and filled out the various documents and forms ahead of time, as opposed to when we have the children ready to go and then we're waiting on the teachers. I'd rather have the teachers there ready to go and ready to start, as opposed to have the children waiting on us to get more teachers for them, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah, will you spell Strong Gens, just so everybody is clear?
Just we want to get everybody. It's shorter for Stronger Generations, but it's STRONG and then GENS, Strong Gens.
Okay, well, it's fascinating work. Keep us posted, Gary, as to how you're getting on.
Yeah.
And if there's anything we can do to help, I'm sure everybody in the Ray Darcy Show would be really glad
to
do that.
Could I just mention one thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just there is on our website, thestronggens.com, there is a link on the top right-hand corner of the page to the PayPal. And we are currently running an emergency fund for friends and family of the refugees that we're kind of in contact with who are still based in Afghanistan. So if anyone wasn't a teacher or wasn't able to volunteer but still wanted to help out, they could always make a little donation there. And just if they just put a message at the bottom saying it was urgent Afghanistan appeal, then that money would go straight towards that fund. So that'd be amazing too.
All right, Gary, fascinating to talk to you. I hope we talk again, and the best of luck with your work. That's Gary O'Keefe there. He's head of recruitment at Strong Gens. Well, I hope you've shaken it off, whatever it was. Taylor Swift there helping you do it. Voice notes, I was saying they're driving me mad. I don't understand the logic of not having a conversation, But and I asked for somebody to enlighten me. And Deirdre from Waterford has very kindly just turned that around so I can see it, done that for me. She said, voice notes. I can tell you exactly why they're so popular. One, you don't get interrupted. You can speak freely and slowly until you've emptied your brain of whatever you're both discussing. Two, it saves time. If you're in a hurry and need to tell somebody something quickly, you don't have time for lengthy chat on the phone. Three, it cuts out all the stuff at the start of a call where you're just getting straight to the point and the person can get back to you at their leisure. And sometimes you really need a rant without interruption. Defo, a form of therapy. Thank you very much, Deirdre, for that enlightenment. So I'm just going to send you a voice message, Deirdre. Thanks very much for that note. I really appreciate it because, like, it's great that people are actually listening and will respond. It kind of makes you feel good and it makes you feel happy and you just feel like you're relating to people.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And welcome back to the show. It is Brenda Donoghue here, 51551. We're now going to talk snails and castles, because Ireland's reputation as a producer of high quality food is growing all the time. But my next two guests have slightly more unusual food production stories. Ava Milka is owner of Scargo Snail Farm, and Alex Durden Robertson runs Huntington Castle, and both are part of Taste in Carlow Discovery Trail. Very much a Carlow theme to the programme this afternoon. Nothing wrong with that. Ava, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Brenda. Everything is hunky-dory. How are you?
Oh, thanks for the laugh. I did Pilates there recently and I'm kind of sore and stiff. So if I laugh, my stomach muscles are a bit sore. So bear with me.
Well, that's a good sign.
It is a good sign. It is a good time. Now, when we think of snails, we think of them as something mainly that you eat in France. But you grew up in Poland. Tell me a little bit about how you ended up in Ireland first and when snails came into your life.
So I came to from Poland. I came to Ireland for work, as many of us living here in Ireland. And our adventure with snail farming started back in 2011-2012. When we had a few plastic containers with a few snails inside and we were growing them purely to satisfy our own appetite because we couldn't get them in Ireland.
Okay, I need to go back. Why snails? Like, I mean, why didn't you have cartons with butterflies or something in them?
This is exactly why, Brenda. We just wanted to have an access to them so we can cook them for our friends and family. And in the meantime, we did extensive market research and we discovered a massive opportunity on the market. And we said to ourselves, why don't we try? So we did. Like, Brenda, if you look at Ireland as a country, we have an ideal climate to farm snails. Just look at your back garden. It's full of them.
Yeah.
We also have clean water, we have a good soil, and we are a farming country with an excellent reputation for food. So why not?
And did you have snails in your apartment, did I hear? Was that the beginning of it?
We did, yes. So we used to keep few plastic containers in our bedroom in Kilkenny back then. That mm-hmm. was back in 2011-2012. So if you looked into our bedroom, Brenda, you would see this beautiful big bed and a few plastic containers stacked up. So they were literally sharing our bedroom at that stage.
And so, did they ever get into the bed? Sorry, I should move on to more interesting things. But did they ever kind of escape from?
No, never.
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 So you never. 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 Okay. Okay. So big move to go from your apartment in Kilkenny to having a farm in Carlow, a snail farm. Amazing.
That's right.
Congratulations, because that's, yeah, it's one thing to say, I'm going to do it, but it's another thing to actually, you know, tick all those boxes till you get there. That must have been challenging.
Well, being first, Brenda, in Ireland farming snails, it was the biggest obstacle for us to overcome, definitely, because we had absolutely nobody to learn from. So the first 3 years, It was a trial and error. Our main objective from the very beginning was to develop a farming method in Ireland that will be able to complete a full farming cycle within the one season, giving our snails as much outdoors time as possible. So yes, I'm much, Brenda, as much as I love calling myself pioneer and the mother of snail farming in Ireland, the truth is that we were really guinea pigs because
snail pigs. No.
Yes, snail pigs. I love that. Mm. Snail pigs, exactly.
Mm. And how many snails have you got in your farm now in Carlow?
And not many, just over 600,000.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's very, very little if you think about farming snails.
And what's the business model? Who you give is transporting the snails to? Are they being cooked? What's the story?
So we, first of all, we provide snail farming courses for people that are interested to learn more about farming snails. Then we also provide initial breeding stock and baby snails for people that are looking to open their own snail farms. Then we guide them throughout the first cycle because the first year is always the most challenging. And then we guarantee market at the end for their product. So if somebody is interested, for example, just to farm snails and they have no interest in trading and marketing, they can bring snails back to us
and you transport them to the market
and we sell them on correct. Yes.
Now, I mean, I said France, you know, when you think of snails you think, you know, France. Our DNA, our palate, I'm not saying everybody, it's just not snail friendly, or we're not used to eating snails.
Snail friendly, I love that. Yeah.
What's happened? Are we improving? What kind of dishes are you doing with snails? And why should we love them?
Brenda, we should love them for many reasons. First of all, they are very high in protein, very low in calories. They contain
very, sorry, go back, very low in calories.
In calories, right. Yes. Yeah. Very low in fat. Very high in protein. They contain nearly all these amino acids needed for the human body. So it's a very healthy meat. They are, some people say that they taste like a meaty mussel. So do you like mussels, Brenda?
Kind of on Rob Carney, maybe.
Okay. And have you ever tried escargot before?
No.
Escargot
no,
meat?
No, no. No,
I think that they are very, very tasty and you can do so much with them. Like you can add them into a scrambled eggs in the morning just for the higher protein count. You can make an escargot omelette or you can make a pasta with tomato sauce and throw a few escargot meat inside, risotto, you name it, really. Or tempura style is my favorite. Like if fish and chips, you know, in the butter.
Yeah.
So they are lovely and crispy on the outside and lovely and meaty on the inside.
You should have had that up here for me to taste. I can't believe it.
Love that.
I'm going home.
I would love that.
We'll talk again. But also on the line and part of the Taste of Carlow Discovery Trail, I have Alex from Huntingdon Castle. Good afternoon, Alex.
Good afternoon, Brenda. How are you doing? Are you
I'm well? Fantastic. Are you hungry after hearing Ava talk about snails there?
Well, I think anything tastes lovely if you put enough garlic and butter in it. And that's what is the best with snails. I love snails. But they're very hard to find on a menu in Ireland. But hopefully that'll change. And people come down to Carlow, you might be able to start finding more of that kind of stuff because there's a lot of food producers here in the county doing great things.
I know.
Like
I think the Saturday food market is terrific there in Carlow. But Alex, tell me, you how come you live in a castle?
Well, by accident of birth, really, Brenda, because our family has, we've been living here since it was built in 1625. So it's been the same family going.
And
since then.
Yeah, and the family castle, there's a lot of history around it. Can you just give me a little bit of an idea or just paint a picture? Because
I've driven past it as a little introduction. Mm. Yeah, it was built as a kind of military garrison to defend what was, or to guard what was, the trade route from Dublin to Wexford. This was the main road coming down from the Wicklow and Carlow areas down onto Wexford, the River Derry and the River Slaney, and it operated as a garrison for around about 50 years. And then it was turned into a family home, and it's been in the family since it was built, so since 1625. So, and we live in it now as a kind of a, it's very much a family home, but we're also open for tourism, for gardens, for events. You have a tea room, we do B&B, we have a farm, so we do a bit of everything.
And lots of famous celebrities, you've hosted them there.
Over the years,
We love all that. Can you tell me who's been there?
Well, like, I suppose for some of the older listeners that would like Phil Lynott and stuff, Phil Lynott was a regular visitor down here.
Where was he?
Yeah, Phil, yeah, down from Dublin.
What can you remember about that? Were you? Well, did
I
you?
Was
were
born
you there?
Yet.
Oh. I just love Phil Lynott, and I love any stories about him. Okay.
Yeah, he was down here quite a lot because he was going out with one of my aunts at the time, so he would have been down quite a bit. And then we had
how long did he go out with one of your aunts for?
History, I'll have to ask her when I see her next. I don't like to embarrass her. At that time, you had people like Stanley Kubrick, who was here for, he stayed here for like 6 weeks. He was filming that big, a huge film, Barry Lyndon, and he was here, staying here for 6 weeks, and it made it in for about 10 seconds.
But that's all you need.
Filming for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, he was so obsessive, he'd spend days positioning one shrub bush or moving a window curtain or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, amazing attention to detail. I mean, completely mad, but anyway, he was here. And then I suppose more recent times we've had the, like, Daniel Lewis was down here quite a bit, used to buy antiques off my dad. Mick Jagger, Calista Flockhart, Michelle Pfeiffer, Rupert Everett. So yeah, we've had a few make their way down to Carlow between times.
It's so funny because there's so many kind of well-known celebs filming over in the country at the moment. But if we just went down to Huntingdon Castle with a pair of binoculars, we would
see
so
anyone.
Many.
You could see anyone.
Even ghosts, Alex. Is that right?
Yes, well, we're haunted. Supposed to be one of the most haunted castles in Ireland, but only nice ghost branded. So people want to come and stay, because I often get asked by B&B guests, is it haunted? And you have to kind of work out, do they want it to be haunted, or are they going to be scared? So you have to kind of gauge your answer depending on what you think people, if they don't mind it being haunted or not.
And I suppose more practically, and the reason we're talking about the Discovery Trail is that Huntingdon Castle is also a farm, which is what has put it on the Discovery Trail map and what we're talking about today. So can you tell me a little bit about that, Alex?
Yeah, so basically, the whole Discovery Trail is basically all about food producers, like what you were saying there, Eva. And we've got lots of local produce, from O'Neill's Bacon, which we use in our B&B breakfast, to Sugar and Spice Bakery, which provides all our baked goods for the tea room. If we have B&B, we obviously produce lamb and food ourselves here on the farm. Our own eggs in the breakfast, which my wife, she'll be very embarrassed, but she won the Georgina Campbell Best Breakfast in Ireland there last year for the B&B breakfast. And then if people stay here for B&B, then walk 400 yards down the road to another tasting Carlow Trail member, which is Charo Bistro, which is a multi-award-winning bistro run by our very good friends Henry and Stephanie Stone. And that's an absolutely superb restaurant. They have a lovely traditional pubs in the village, Duns and Osborne's there. And it's a lovely little package. And people who come down from Dublin or come down from Cork or Limerick or wherever, they're amazed to find it. It's like a little hidden, but we always say Carlow's a hidden gem. But
absolutely.
Really,
do you know what
so
it is? It is. I've spent a good bit of time down in Carlow over the summer with my little fella, then they're going swimming and everything, and had an amazing time. Ava,
it's less than an hour. Like, it's only 40 minutes drive from the
entrance. Not if you're coming from Cork or Donegal now, Alex, in fairness. But
no,
Ava,
but like, still, it's handy to get to. It's good roads and it's handy to get to.
Ava, it's been fascinating talking to you, and Alex as well. And listen, the very, very, very best of luck with the newly launched Taste in Carlow Discovery Trail. We know we could talk for ages. We know we've learned a lot about snails and castles and ghosts. So I appreciate you giving the time to the programme today.
We'll try and get Rob Carney to get covered in snails, Brendan.
Stop. Now you're going to embarrass
that
me.
That would be cool. But Brenda, may we invite all your listeners to come to Carlow and explore the Taste in Carlow Discovery Trail, because it's a guide to 26 of hidden food and beverage gems around, and you can have a great time.
I think hanging out with you and Alex would be a great time. Thank you both so much. If you're
Thanks
visiting
so much.
Carlo and you want to taste some of his unique culinary offerings, you can download the trail map at tastecarlo.ie. Thank you, guys.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And it's Brenda Donoghue in here for the afternoon. As you can tell, I'm getting a big response on the voice notes. And it says, Brenda, voice notes are the best thing since the high bike. If you're in a hurry or unable to text or call at a particular time, they're ideal, said Damien and Claire. Thanks very much, Damien and Claire. I'll send you a voice note later. Connor Pope, do you do voice notes?
I'm glad you asked me that, Brenda, because I can say, hand on heart, I have never once in my life sent anybody a voice note. And I get them every now and then. And God forgive me, I kind of feel a bit resentful when I do. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because it would take me like 3 seconds, 5 seconds max to read a fairly long text message. Whereas if somebody sends me a voice note that lasts for like 45 seconds, you got to listen to the whole thing. So it takes 45 seconds. So it might be easier for the sender, but it's a lot harder for the recipient.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm a ginnam.
And it also feels like, do you not want to talk to me? Anyway, let's get on. We have lots of issues to try and get into. So if you have a query you'd like Connor to look at, pricewatch at rte.ie. Can I ask, where are you, Connor?
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you asked, because I should be in studio, and I was looking forward to being in studio.
And I'd love to see you.
But then late last week, I got the call from the HSE saying that two people who are very close to me are due to get vaccinated today. So I'm taking them to get vaccinated instead.
Okay.
So that's where I am right now.
All right. Well, that's a very good thing to be doing. And the best of luck with that.
But they're thrilled, I have to say, these two people who are very close to me. They're very excited about it. And I actually I spent some of the journey to the vaccination centre telling them how the vaccination process works and how the vaccination works. And I have to say, every time I learn a little bit more about the Pfizer vaccine or the mRNA vaccine, I just say, God, thank God for science. It's just amazing.
Absolutely. And I'd say, they're saying, why you stopped? But anyway, here we go. We have a problem in. I'm going to read it out because we're up against it a tiny bit. Here's our problem that came in and said, I booked a ferry in June for a July sailing to visit my parents in England. I could hear the noise there. I booked a ferry for June for a July sailing to visit my parents in England for the first time since Christmas 2019. We were on a hugely tight schedule because of medical appointments for my son, who was undergoing a very long-awaited autism assessment, summer camp, work for my daughter and quarantine requirements and patient clinic bookings for my job as a hospital nurse. Irish Ferries cancelled my sailing, the quicker Swift sailing, and then moved us to the slower Ulysses boat. This did not suit us, as we would arrive too late to attend the Zoom appointment for my son's assessment. So my husband stayed in Ireland while my daughter and I travelled. I replied to the cancellation email asking for the booking to be amended, but no response. I sent further emails and eventually managed to change my booking by telephone, but was told there could be no refund unless I emailed customer services. This I did repeatedly, but apparently they cannot help. It's only disruption at irishferries.com that can authorise funds. They do not seem to reply to my emails. Indeed, I still have not received a reply from my initial messages. Travelling, cancelling, it's so difficult. Have you any light to shed on this particular issue about the ferries?
But this doesn't have to be difficult. This is not like one of the other stories that we've dealt with on the show in the past, Brenda. And like when like remember last March, April, May, June, every single flight, every single ferry in the world pretty much was cancelled. Mm. And as a result, the whole industry was in turmoil. This is a very different thing. It's a routine matter. Now, I've no criticism with Irish Ferries cancelling the faster ferry and going with a slower ferry. These things happen. They probably have operational reasons for doing that. So we can't possibly criticise them for saying that. But there's a fundamental problem here. And it's a fundamental problem that I've come across before in connection with this company and indeed with other companies. And that's the difficulties that they put in people's ways when it comes to making contact with them. And that's ultimately all this is about. This is just about making it easy for people to contact you. Because there's no question of the rights this couple have or this family have to get a refund for the flights or the ferry that they didn't use. All of that stuff is open and shut. It's black and white. It's really, really straightforward. So the only problem here is making contact with the company to say, you have a legal obligation to me. I want you to honour that obligation. So, you know, herself and her child went off to the UK. They saw her family, first time in a long time. But then, you know, they want they were legally entitled to a refund back for the portions of those journeys that they didn't take. So it shouldn't have been rocket science. And then when they got through to, when they eventually got through to somebody, they said, oh no, this is the wrong email address. You need to contact this other email address. And then this other email address just simply ignored them. They didn't respond to them. Now that's unacceptable. And it would be unacceptable if it was a little mom and pop shop where there was one or two people working. But it's way more unacceptable when it's a big company with a huge amount of resources, and it's all about someone's legal entitlements. So that's where we are with this particular story, right? It's really straightforward, and I can understand the frustration. This has been going on for weeks and weeks and weeks, and it's utterly unacceptable. So I contacted Irish Ferries on behalf of our listener, okay?
Yes.
And I got a response that I have to say really infuriated me, because I've been doing this for a very long time. I've been doing it for 15 years, maybe even longer than that. And I can probably count on one hand, maybe two hands, the number of times I've got a response of this nature.
Wow.
And I'll give you, I'm going to read you the response in full.
Okay.
It's very short. For data reasons, Irish Ferries cannot comment on individual customer details. However, we are reaching out to our customer to resolve the issue. We can confirm that if Irish Ferries cancel sailing, customers can opt for an alternative sailing where it suits their travel plans or for a no-quibble refund. This idea that for data reasons they can't deal with this problem in a meaningful way is absolute nonsense. And I have a funny feeling that Irish Ferries know that it's absolute nonsense. And I know they know it's nonsense because the company, the PR company who sent me this response, also represent other big companies who I've been dealing with routinely for a long time. So there are no data implications. This company could have given us a more full and detailed response to this problem, but they chose not to. There's no legal impediment to them having done that. I suppose the only positive thing I can say about this is they have said they are going to reach out to our customer to resolve the issue. So my commitment now to your listeners is I will also be reaching out to the customer to make sure that the issue is resolved to her satisfaction, and then we can go from there. But it just really infuriates me when companies hide behind so-called data reasons, because they're spurious and they're non-existent. This person has asked us to intervene on her behalf.
On a legitimate reason, with the legitimate reason.
Yeah. So you can't hide behind data protection. It's nonsense. But that's what they've chosen to do in this instance, and I don't think they come out of this particularly well.
Well, Conor, thank you so much. And you'll be back again next Monday, pricewatch@rte.ie. And you'll probably have an update on this story because I know you're going to contact the customer. I wish you the best of luck on your journey there to the vaccination centre. You're nearly a woman. You can do two things at the one time. And listen. Yes.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon.
All
nice
right.
To you, Brenda.
Safe travelling. Thanks
bye
very
bye.
Much,
bye.
Conor Pope.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And an ish toshin am the brief skelton nuota, Lamora breed ni kulan. Gormila mahagot, Marade there. Lots of texts in about meeting the parents, because we were talking about Love Island, where they had to meet the parents and meet the families, and they're all wearing togs. And I was looking for some of your memories of meeting your future in-laws. And Richard has been on, he said, my memory of meeting my future mother-in-law occurred in railway station, you know what's in my head, when going on the first visit to Clonmel in June 1989, much to my future wife's horror, when I got off the train, I put my bag down on the platform and went to shake hands with her mum, momentarily forgetting the train was still in the station, and gave the remaining passengers on the train a bird's eye view for our first meeting with her family. I could almost hear the "ah" as the train pulled away. Eileen was not pleased, but she got over it, and we were married 18 months later, said Richard. That's not really that bad. I was kind of looking for jumping into bed with the mother-in-law. Anyway, as long as you're happy, Richard. Brenda, just back from a fantastic weekend in a camper van around Inishowen. Oh, that sounds lovely. Getting to grips with the laundry. That doesn't sound lovely. The first time my husband met the parents, I hadn't told my parents he was coming. When he arrived into the living room, my father jumps up from the chair, poker in hand. My husband got quite a shock, as you can imagine, till he realised that my lovely, gentle father was jumping off his chair to offer it to him. Dad was in the middle of riddling the fire, hence poker in hand. 36 years later, we still laugh about it. And I was looking to say I spent about 50 hours of my summer of my life watching Love Island this season. I'm wondering, I'll never get it back again. But what would you do with a few, with a free 50 hours. And someone said, Brenda, if I got a gift of 50 hours, I would take a 21-hour round-trip flight to New Zealand and have 8 wonderful hours with my favourite man, Timothy, who's in lockdown, said Anne in Blackrock. Hello to Timothy. And Anne, of course. Brenda, if I had 50 hours, and after almost 2 years of total chaos on the family front, 2 years of not sitting leaving, since 2020, 2021, I hear you, sister, 3rd of September, results are out. My son and my daughter, stuck at home and juggling all their issues, moods and wants, well, I would disappear to the most remote island off the coast with my tent, camera, hiking boots and my 2 dogs. And I wouldn't want to see another human being, said Bernie in Tipperary. You might get to do that, Bernie, for 50 hours. Do you know what it's time for? It's time for our... Yes, it's time for our quiz of the day. We have rounded up events in history that have happened on this day, on the 21st of August, and created questions for 2 of you to come on air and go head to head for a fantastic prize. And the fantastic prize we're giving away is the chance of a 2-night breakaway in the Kingsley Hotel in Cork, with breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening in the Springboard restaurant. And of course, it's a riverside location on the banks of the River Lee, and a great base to explore Cork City and County. That's a great prize for our quiz of the day. So let's meet our players. And player number one is Martin. Good afternoon, Martin.
Hello, Brenda. How are you?
I'm great. Where are you, Martin?
I'm in Castleblaney, Brenda. I'm a bag of nerves. But I'll do my best.
Don't be nervous. It's only me. Honest to God. Do you know what? Give yourself a little shake.
I've been doing that for the last 10 minutes, but...
Oh, listen, Castle Blaney's great. Are you having... What do you do up there?
What I do for a living, I work from home. I'm a BER assessor, so get the best of both worlds. The odd trip out and out to look at nice new houses, and then sit in my office and do my own thing.
And what's BER assessment again? It's to do with energy and...
Energy use in dwelling houses. It's becoming very important with energy costs rising and preparing for the winter now, trying to keep houses nice and cosy.
Absolutely. And your own house, I presume it's nice and cosy as well. Who's with you at home, Martin?
Well, normally Mary is here, my wife, but last I heard she was on her way to Glencar Waterfall in Leitrim to find a hat that she dropped there earlier on today. So that's where she is today. Nice day to be.
And she had to go back to see, could she find the hat?
Yeah, she was there earlier, and she was gone home and discovered the hat was missing, so she's on her way back there.
And
so,
can you describe the hat?
Well, it's a very interesting hat. It's called a hag. It's a cross between a hat and a bag. It can be it's made by a girl by Amara Earth. If you've ever heard of them, it can be used as a hat or a bag.
I have never heard of this. You are
there. You are. There's a little plug for Amy. A hag.
You are a fountain of knowledge, Martin. And what does it look like? Because if anybody's around the area, you need to return the hag to Mary.
It's like a bucket hat. It's navy blue, but she's probably got it by now, so I wouldn't.
Is it expensive?
Annoy the whole country. It's very nice. I think I'm not sure the price. I don't get into that department.
Okay. And tell me, how did you meet Mary?
Well, I came to Castleblaney in 1984 and Mary was already here, so we hooked up in the local variety club and the rest is history.
A variety, is that the variety club to support the artists?
Well, it was a local song and dance group, used to put on pantomimes and shows every year, you
lovely.
Know. So it's a great.
And what did you do, Martin?
Well, I mean, you didn't need any particular talent to be in these shows. So we just did little song and dance routines and pantomimes and a bit of acting and a bit of. But it was a social aspect more so than anything else.
And you met. Well, I'll have to tell you who you're playing up against. You're playing up against Angela Kelly. Angela, you are in Moat. How are you today?
I'm great, thank you, Brenda.
Well, you should be great, because I have something written down here. Do you want to say it?
Well, maybe as we get on in years, we don't want to publicise
no.
that much.
Well, we don't have to put any numbers on it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's my birthday.
So. Yay, happy birthday.
Thank you.
And did you get anything special, anything nice happen today?
I've got a lovely, fabulous bunch of flowers from my three children.
Yes.
Growing up children, of course. And hopefully going out for dinner tonight. My husband, when he gets home from work.
Oh, and tell me about your children. Are they, said grown up. Where are they?
Yeah.
What are they?
Shane is the eldest and he's married to Niamh a couple of years now, and they're about to start building their house. And then Claire is next and she's in Abu Dhabi.
Oh.
Working, she works for a New York University in HR department, and she's there over six years now, nearly.
Yeah.
And Rachel is the youngest, the baby, and she's just left last Thursday week to go teaching in Abu Dhabi.
Oh, well, at least they have each other.
That's it. They have. They're close to each other, yeah.
Which is nice. And then, of course, I can get Martin, who does the bear assessments, to help your son building the new house.
Yeah. Well, Shane is in the construction business himself, so he'd be definitely into Martin's type of work.
Oh, well, you're
Martin
all set.
Say hello to him.
And is it difficult now with the two girls in Abu Dhabi? I'm just thinking I have two myself, and you know, I'm just, they're about to kind of launch off to college and everything, and I'm going to miss them.
Yeah, you are. Well, we were lucky we had Rachel for the extra year. Well, lucky or unlucky.
I know.
But lucky for her because of COVID. But
yeah.
She was here for the extra year, so we had a great time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't be holding people back. They have to get on and do their own thing, haven't they?
Yeah, I'd say it's much quieter, the house now, is it?
Very quiet.
Yeah.
Very hard to get used to. We've just the black Labrador here, that's it.
Well, look, today's your birthday. It could be a good day because we have prize in the Kingsley Hotel in Cork. Are you ready to rock and roll, Martin?
Absolutely. Happy birthday, Angela. Best of luck to you.
Thank you, Martin. And good luck to yourself. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Martin, you are player number one, so your first question. Are we ready to roll? Okay. Question number one to you. On this day in 1974, the government of Ethiopia was overthrown in an army coup. On what continent would you find Ethiopia?
That'd be Africa, I think.
That is correct. And first question to you, Angela. On this day in 1954, President Vargas of Brazil resigned temporarily. On what continent would you find Brazil?
South America.
That is correct. One apiece. Okay, second question for you, Martin. It is an audio question, so you're going to have to listen to this clip. So have a listen first and then I'll ask you your question.
Okay.
So, Martin, on this day in 1995, actor Larry Hagman received a liver transplant. He played the part of J.R. Ewing in that US drama. Can you name it?
Dallas, I think.
Dallas is correct. Don't even say I think. Dallas will do. That'll do. Here's your audio one. Are you ready? Have a listen to this, Angela, and then I'm going to ask you the question.
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
So on this day in 1949, Shelley Long, American actress, was born in Fort Wayne, Indiana. She played the part of Diana in that long-running US sitcom. Can you name it?
Cheers.
Correct. Two apiece while we're flying here. Number three for you, Martin. On this day in 1931, Count Carli became Prime Minister of Hungary. Which of these countries does Hungary share a land border with? Czech Republic or Slovakia?
Czech Republic or Slovakia.
As quick as you can, Martin.
Czech Republic.
I wouldn't have done that because it's wrong. It's Slovakia.
Oh.
All right, you okay. can now nip into the lead, Angela. Here you go, your third question. On this day in 2012, 28 people were injured in a hot air ballooning accident in Slovenia. Which of these countries does Slovenia share a border with? Italy or Germany? Dun, dun, dun.
I'd say Germany.
You should have said Italy because you got that wrong as well. Dun, dun, dun. So, okay, another audio clip for you. Have a listen to this and then I'm going to ask you a question, Martin. So that song, Round Round, was number one on this day in 2002. Can you name the all-girl group who sang it, Martin?
Wouldn't be my style, Brenda. I wouldn't have a clue.
So are you giving me an answer or are you saying no answer?
Just say the Saturdays, but...
The Flatterties?
No, the Saturdays. Just a wild guess. I'm
no,
sure
you're wrong. Right. It's the Sugar Babes. Okay, here you go, Angela. Your chance to nip into the lead. Okay. Have a listen to this and then give me the correct answer. I'm on tonight, you know my hips don't lie, and I'm starting to feel you, joy. Come on, let's go. Real slow. Don't you see, baby? I see it's perfect. I know I'm on tonight, my hips don't lie, and I'm starting to feel it's right. All the attraction. That song there, The Hips Don't Lie, was number one on this day in 2006. Can you name the singer?
Shakira.
You're right. You've just popped into the lead there, Angela. But never fear, Martin. There's still more to play. Last question to you. On this day in 1799, Napoleon left Egypt to return to seize power in France. Which of these countries has a larger population than France? Iran, South Africa or Colombia?
I would say Iran.
Well, Colombia has 50 million, South Africa has 59 million, France has 65 million, and you're correct, Iran has 83 million. Okay, your last question, Angela.
Okay.
So on this day in 1914, during World War One, Japan declared war on Germany. Which of these countries has a larger population than Germany? The UK, Egypt, or South Korea?
UK, Egypt.
Or South Korea.
South Korea.
Quick as you can.
South Korea, I think.
South Korea. Well, Germany's a population of 83 million. The UK has a population of 67 million. South Korea has 53. And Egypt has 101. Okay. So you know what that means? My favourite. You're incorrect. It's a tiebreaker. Okay. Are you ready? You've both answered this question upstairs. You've given your estimates. So whoever comes closest will win that lovely prize in the Kingsley. Here's your tiebreaker question. On this day in 1908, Mervyn Wall, writer, was born in Dublin. According to Google Maps, how long would it take to walk from the GPO in Dublin to Naas in County Kildare? Answers in hours and minutes. What did you say, Martin?
I think I did try to do the maths on it and I got a decimal point missing, so I think I said 4.5 hours, which is mad wrong.
And what did you say, Angela?
Oh, I said 2 hours 35 minutes.
Well, it is 6 hours and 45 minutes, which is 33 kilometres, which means Martin, you're on your way to the Kingsley Hotel.
Bad luck, Angela. Hard luck.
That's all right. Not to worry.
All right, Angela, it's your birthday. We'll send you 2 mugs for your birthday. Is that all right?
Thank you.
Have a lovely day. And Martin.
Thanks a million.
All right, well done. I hope your wife finds the hag. Great to talk to you both.
Great to talk to you, Brenda. Bye. Thank you very much.
Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Limerick were, of course, triumphant in yesterday's All-Ireland hurling final. But 25 years ago, they featured in another final, one which they weren't the winners, but losers to Wexford. Tom Doyle, a Wexford fan, was inspired by that famous win to create what he says is the first ever GAA graphic novel. And he joins me now. Hello, Tom. How are you?
Hey, Brendan, how are you doing?
Good, good, good. I presume it's even sunnier in Wexford than the rest of the country because it's always better.
Always, always.
Now, come here, tell me first of all, what is a graphic novel? Because I did think it wasn't what I thought it was, if you know what I mean.
Right. Well, it's basically a comic book, but it's a longer version. So they're much longer than a comic book. So it tells a story from beginning to end, basically using illustrations. Whereas a comic book, you know, you get a series of comics telling a story. But this is just essentially one story from beginning to end. And spoiler alert, Wexford win in the end.
And do you think this is the first ever? Yeah. Sorry, I got you there. Do you think this is the first ever one that's been done on the GA?
As far as I know, anyway, I'd be a graphic novel fan, comic book fan anyway, and mm-hmm. I've had a few graphic novel books on sport over the years, and they're mainly baseball and boxing, wrestling, things like that, but I don't think I've come across a GA one, so pretty sure this is the first one, and if it's not, I'd love to know.
So Wexford blazing a trail again, and you've based it around the last time Wexford won the All-Ireland, which is what, 1996? I remember
a long
that
time
myself.
Ago.
Yeah, I was only a child. But why then?
I suppose because it was inspirational for Wexford people. I was 14 at the time, so it hit me really at the right age. And all those players and managers like Liam Griffin, you know, they're heroes to all of us Wexford people, and I know people from other counties probably are sick of us harping on about it, but
I know
we celebrate all Ireland, you know.
I know. Well, like, I mean, I'm Kildare, in 98 we got into the football final and lost, but yeah. I mean, I'll still talk freely about that. Yeah. So this graphic novel, I have a kind of a copy of it in front of me, and I'm just looking at the detail, which is extraordinary, and I'm wondering, how long did it take you to put this together?
A long time, yeah. The idea probably came into my head about 15 years ago, but I probably didn't have the skills back then to write and illustrate it. So about 7 years ago, I probably broke ground on it and I had to write it. And I probably haven't written anything since the Leaving Cert, so that took me years to write.
Yeah.
And you had to write it differently because graphic novel is basically from square to square, if you know what I mean, panel to panel. So you have to connect them all together. So that took me a long, long time. And then COVID happened last year, and that's when I got the bones of it.
Apart from the actual, you know, the pictures and that, the you have to be very select with the words that you use. I mean, it's an actual complete skill. Now, it starts with a very iconic scene when the Wexford players walked across the county border. Now, I even remember this story. Yeah. I thought it was the All-Ireland final, but it was the Leinster final. Will you just remind us very quickly about that, if you don't mind?
Yeah, it was a kind of a sports psychology thing that was brought in at the time by Liam Griffin. So he got the players to get off the bus near the Wexford-Wicklow border, and the players thought the bus had broken down, but the bus took off and stopped up the road, and Liam Griffin made a huge speech then, telling them who they were and where they're from and how great their names were and the forefathers that, you know, battled in 1798, etc. And then he made them all promise that the next time that they're going to walk up this road and cross out of Wexford and into Wicklow, and the next time they come back, they'll bring the Leinster Cup with them. So it was a huge boost to the players on the way to the match.
I know, it was very powerful. I'm just thinking of the Limerick team that won yesterday. They are very different to the one that lost to Wexford.
Yeah. Far more powerful. Like, the game has changed so much in, like, even the last 4 or 5 years. Like, that Limerick team yesterday, I think you could nearly pick the best players from every county in Ireland to play them yesterday, and I still think Limerick would have won fairly handy. They're just awesome.
And this graphic novel, it set the heater blazing, is that right?
Set the heather blazing.
The heather blazing.
So it's from the
one of those
county
days.
Song Boule of Vogue.
Yeah.
It's from our county song Boule of Vogue, and it's basically one of the lines in it is a rebel hand set to heather blazing.
Not the heater. No. That's
no,
very
not the
funny.
Heater, no.
And
still summer.
It's a great achievement, and who do you want to read it?
Anyone, any GAA fan, I think, would be interested. Obviously, Wexford fans, first and foremost, will probably love this. And I hope to donate some of the proceeds to Wexford Hospice. because the book is dedicated to my father, who passed away in 2008, Jimmy, age 54, and my best friend, who passed away just in January, Tom Shiggins. He was only 39, and so the book is dedicated to them, and Wexford Hospice were great in looking after those two really important people in my life in their final days. So, but I think anyone really would be interested in this graphic novel. That even if you're not interested in sport, I think there's a human story in there as well. Like some of the players have some troubles on the way, and even Liam Griffin had a couple of problems on the way. That's in the book as well.
And it is. And where can people get it very quickly, if you don't mind, Tom?
On yellowbelly.ie, and it should be on sale on September the 1st, which is exactly 25 years to the day that we won the All-Ireland.
And of course, there'll be no living with you that day. You won't forget it. A pleasure to talk to you, Tom, and the very best of luck with your graphic novel, Set the Heather Blazing. A pleasure to talk to you.
Well,
that's it from me for today. Thanks very much to Dave, who produced. Ray is back tomorrow. Enjoy the beautiful weather. And Cormac is up now on Drive Time.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.